Welcome to Indy Radio Garden. This week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WJYNLP 98.5 Uptown Entertainment and Development. The host of the Tall Talk show, Latif White, interviews Erica Alexander and her co-host, Whitney Dow, about their podcast series, Reparations, The Big Payback.
We are honored to have Erica Alexander and Whitney Dow on to talk about The Big Payback.
Yeah.
Their excellent podcast that they have out. I was checking it out. There was a lot of things that I thought that, there's things that I knew that weren't incorrect, but I learned a lot more. It's very, very dope dynamic. Mm-hmm. And we got them on the line right here.
Okay.
And from what I can see, it says that they are ready.
Oh,
so
well, all
right. I'm going to turn this up on the soundboard here. And here we go. Oh, I gotta mute this joint. I gotta mute myself on my phone because I'm. Here we go.
Oh, there we go.
Getting through the technological differences.
Now we're from Philly, so we call everything John.
John.
Hello, hello.
I'm from Philly too.
Hey,
hey.
What's going on,
hello,
y'all?
Queen.
What's going on?
You want to start with me?
Okay. Well, yes, yeah, it's Reparations, the Big Pack on iHeartRadio. Yeah. Okay, so Reparations, the Big Payback on iHeartRadio and the Black Effect, and produced by Charlemagne the God. And I'm here with my very, very, very talented partner, Erica Alexander, who puts me through my paces every week on the Big Payback. But if you want to learn about reparations, I hope everybody tunes into it. I think, Erica, maybe you could talk a little bit about the origin, where this thing came from, how we end up here.
Sure. So Whitney and I are partners and co-hosts on this Reparations broadcast, and we are actually co-directing a documentary about reparations called Dear Evanston. I don't know if you've heard, but there's been more talk about it last week that Robin Rue Simmons, alderwoman Robin Rue Simmons, passed the first act, bill for reparations for Black Americans in American history. She started this journey in 2019, the year of that we were starting to talk about 400 years in this country, 1619. And she passed that bill very auspiciously in that year. And then this, it was the year they actually, you know, signed it and, you know, ratified it and that type of a thing. We were following her and we thought it was a great story that popped up that we didn't expect. We were actually talking and following H.R. 40, which is in Congress, and Sheila Jackson Lee has been pushing through since John Conyers left Congress. But then this story came up, and we got together. Whitney is a person who's been doing race awareness inside of his community for many years now. He did a documentary with another partner, Marco Williams, called Two Towns of Jasper, about James Byrd. And he also had this project called The Whiteness Project and other documents, other documentaries and projects and programs. And then there's me. I'm Black. And so I was interested in reparations for all the reasons that any Black person might be interested if they think about how the devastating policies and legislations over 400 years have adversely affected our community. So we got together and we were doing this podcast. Charlemagne the God said, hey, you want to do it on my network? We'd say we'd love to. He gave us the resources and we've been off to the races ever since.
That's incredible.
Excellent. What were your personal inspirations to work on the project together?
Well, you know, we have a mutual friend named, you might have heard her name, Joy Reid. And Joy Reid, I've been talking to Joy about reparations on one side into one ear, and Erica has been talking to Joy about reparations into her other ear. And one day she called up, she said, you know, you and Erica should get together. You guys would hit it off. And
So we got together, and one of the things that we think is really important is this idea that it's not a black issue and it's not a white issue. Mm-hmm. It's something that needs to be approached from both sides. That, mm-hmm. you know, from my side as a white person, I believe the white that reparations are one of the most important issues, if not the most important issue facing our country right now. That so many of the divisions that are dividing us, we talk about this country being really divided mm-hmm. on a number of fronts politically, but I think they really flow from this division between, we have never dealt with the original division, the original division between black and white and Americans, and until we figure out a way as white people to address that head on and make reparations with black Americans, that we're not going to be able to, that has to be the foundational point before we can mm-hmm. move on and tackle some of the other issues. So I always joke, I mean, I'm like, Erica, you know, I talk like, I'm here to save white people. That's my goal. And, you know, so I know that probably people will laugh about that, but I really do. I believe that for white Americans to become fully vested citizens of this country, and in some ways fully human, they need to make reparations with black Americans.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Erica, how about yourself? What was your inspiration to... push this information? I know it's been a big topic. What really made you want to get up and say, I'm going to do a podcast about this?
I think when I started this journey, I mistook the reparation issue or a policy or a payment that would come from white people directly to black people, but that's not mm-hmm. true. There is a moral debt involved, definitely toward us and fellow African-Americans. I was convinced afterwards in this journey that being educated by those who have been committed and experts in this issue, that's a very limited view, and it's too small for this very complex conversation. So part of me is that I'm very curious, and that I worked in as a surrogate and mm-hmm. and as a an organizer and that type of thing for a while now. And I'd been meeting those people, John Lewis. I produced the John Lewis documentary. Mm-hmm. And I've been working inside of these types of issues for a long time. My father was a preacher. My mother was a teacher and a social worker. So they've been in public service their whole life. A lot of black people have been in public service their whole life. Mm-hmm. And there's just things that are so complex that they're also, you know, worthy of a deeper dive. And a lot of people were afraid to even discuss reparations. Mm. But now we see that inside of the DNA of America is this great debt. And whether it's the government's debt to pay or people or whoever's, or however we deal with the obligations between individual institutions or educational institutions, we got to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And there should be reparative programs. And so that's why I got into it, partly because it's something I'm interested in, but I also think that as a grassroots organizer and a person that believes in marginalized communities and upholding their voices, you cannot not discuss this.
Right.
And so why not be a part of it?
So, Erica, I think that if I read correctly, that you've been working on this project for over 2 years, right? So what was the most shocking information you discovered during your research? And Whitney, yes, feel free to chime in too.
What's the most shocking information?
Yes.
I think that, well, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, the reparations being about 40 acres and a mule, mm-hmm. and finding out how that whole thing came about and really understanding more about reconstruction. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was shocking. I just think it was something that I didn't really know, you know, that they were really trying to give African Americans or just ex-slaves some kind of pension or a way to go on it. Mm-hmm. And however it started and however it ended, once again, it's always slavery, excuse me, it's always racism and bias that comes into play. Also, it was surprised to find how many ways the American Indians have had different treaties broken and those types of things, but also what did work for them and what has been working. Mm-hmm. Here's a shocking thing. Mm-hmm. They paid the slave owners reparations.
Wow.
But not us.
That's true. Yeah.
It's just so wacky and sad.
so twisted. And Whitney, do you anything to chime in?
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I, you know, there's a couple of things. That one is the, you know, when you sort of think about reparations and you can say, well, you know, I agree that there should be reparations. Black people, Black Americans should be compensated for the labor their ancestors did, or there may, we need to make financial reparations, also repair the damage done. That's easy to say. But the level of complexity inside that sentence is just how to actually, you know, to answer all those questions and to be able to ask, you know, who gets it, in what form, with what expected outcome. It's a super, super complex, you know, it's such a complex question. I always joke with Erica that, you know, I have the easy job, right, as a white person. All I have to do is advocate for it. Like, I have no standing to say, like, what it should be or how it should be. So I can just say, yeah, let's go do it. But, like, the Black Americans are going to have to figure out how to do it. And that's going to be really, really, really hard. And the second thing that was really shocking me is interesting to me is that how open Americans have become to this conversation. I'm not talking about politicians, but, you know, how far we've come in the last four years. I really think that, or maybe the last 6 years, since Trayvon Martin was killed, was murdered, and Ferguson, Eric Garner, up and through George Floyd, that the rapidity of how fast the discussion has evolved,
right,
that to see major party political candidates get up on debate stages and say that there should be reparations, I never thought I would see that in the time we're seeing. So it's, even though, you know, by nature I'm a pessimist, it was really amazing to see that happen. Now we'll see if HR 40 can get passed. You know, we know it's a bill to talk about reparations. We'll see if it can get passed. But I think that to see how far the country has traveled over the last 6 years in this discussion has been really shocking to me.
I feel like sometimes it doesn't always hit the mark the way it should. Now, this past year, I've seen some things, some outrage.
But
you
no
know.
Action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the action that we need to have happen.
Right.
You know, and so I guess my thoughts are, what are your thoughts?
And if I may say a little bit, too, because you asked what could be done, you know, we kind of to look at what could be done, you have to look at what was done, what was undone. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look at the disadvantages that are baked in, you talk about the financial, we've talked about real estate. Ta-Nehisi Coates famously wrote his essay that talked about the disadvantages baked into the Chicago system, redlining, all that, judicial, stop and frisk, all the educational, military, corporate systems, everything. There's white terrorism acting on us all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we can see it out loud when we look at the Capitol and see them swarm it, breaking windows, because they don't see themselves as owners of the future. And they are right. It is a wrap. There is a rebranding of America, and they're fearing for it. And instead of saying, why don't I go teach myself a new skill set? They're gonna blame everybody else for what they ain't got. But I say, if after all these years you ain't got nothing, that's on you. And they do have everything. Right now, they're still in the majority in terms of power.
Yeah.
It will be for a very long time, but instead of seeing that as an opportunity to start to find common ground and create the America that is the future, we find different ways to recreate the same old thing. So what can be done? We can do what Stacey Abrams has done down south. And organize and try to stop legislation that stops us from voting. If we get people in there and that in those spaces that can continue to obstruct and challenge us like that, we'll never get anything done. But I think people now see that instead of saying, oh, voting doesn't matter, they see that it matters very much. And so we can do that at the very base. What John Lewis wanted was to keep the vote sacred and to keep us going there and let it be fair. If you lose on your ideas, then you've lost a fair fight. But if you lose because they're it's rigged and they made it too difficult for people to do something that should be a basic American right, then there's a problem. So I think that that's what we can do, is that we can be good citizens and good people and good community members, but also honor the ancestors and everything they fought for and died for. and vote. And then also, when you look at George Floyd and what happened there and the unfairness of that, we must continue to hold people's feet to the fire and stand up and deliver mm-hmm. for people like him, who's walking around with COVID, jobless. They thought that counterfeit $20 bill was worth his death, was in payment for it. Mm-hmm. That's what his life was worth. And we say, no, it's not. Now we're going to, you know, we want to bring the bondsmen in and stop killing black people, stop killing, attacking Asian Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what we can do is pay attention and do what we've always done, but we have to do action. We have to stay vigilant.
The second audio comes from the first Scrap Radio workshop on the creation of radio content with a gender perspective. A participant, Caitlin Alicia Sieri, delivers her homework with an audio drama called Marooned on Planet Machismo.
Marooned on Planet Machismo, a Cartesian theater production with Taiwo Shokan as Ms. Daly and Jaleesa Basak as Wendy. Written and produced by Caitlin Sieri.
Wendy.
Miss Daly.
Have a seat. Do you want to explain this?
It's my script for Captain Hyperion Space Outlaw, next Saturday's edition.
Don't get smart with me, Wendy.
I thought you hired me for my brains. Said you needed more of that in Radiation Studios.
Brains, yes. Petty infighting, no. You know, Buck sent me the script for episode 150 a few days ago. Marooned on Planet Virago. According to the office grapevine, you saw his script on his desk, read through it, and spent an hour arguing about it. One night later, you sent me this. Episode 151, Marooned on Planet Machismo. So, Wendy, do you want to explain this?
Buck was doing it wrong.
Doing what wrong?
We've all seen that story before. Men and women from Earth get trapped in an alien world where women are the rulers. They treat the new women like part of the gang, but the new men as second-class citizens. The Earth men are chained up and made to perform physical labor, but they try to stage a rebellion, and the Earth women try to convince the alien woman that there's a better way. Something terrible happens. Men and women are forced to work together. The ruling power allows men to be equal to women, or the alien men overthrow the alien women with the Earth men and Earth's women help, and the new ruling power allows men and women to be equal. Everybody and their mothers done their story.
So you wrote Marooned on Planet Machismo because Planet Virago was cliche?
No, because Planet Virago was inaccurate. Think about it, Ms. Daly. This is a script that details what would happen if women had all the power and subjugated men. Now flip the genders and tell me if there was ever a civilization where men willingly ceded their power over women after a crisis. Go on. I'll wait.
All excellent points, which could be made in the writer's room instead of rewriting a fellow author's script because you're pissed off at men.
Aren't you?
I expect my writers to have a certain level of professionalism, Wendy. You may not all agree with each other's characterization, world building, or politics, but you get past those differences and work together. That's what makes Radiation Studios great.
Funny you mentioned that. How well do you know Buck?
About as well as any other writer here.
Typical producers.
What was that?
Do you remember the first episode I've ever written for Captain Hyperion?
Episode 84. A Replicant Dream of 3D Printed Sheep. Clunky title, but a fan favorite. Basically changed the trajectory of Hyperion and Phoebe's relationship.
I just worked with what the canon gave me. But Buck disagreed. He said it would never get approved.
And where are you going with this?
Well, once the numbers started coming in for Replicant Dream, Buck got upset. You remember that March meeting when I suggested a live reenactment of our three most popular episodes to celebrate the end of season 6?
Buck interrupted, and I reminded him you were still talking.
Mm-hmm. And then he said, "Well, sorry, Your Majesty. I didn't realize it was the girl's turn to speak."
I censured him for that after the meeting. He assured me he was having a bad day and that it wouldn't happen again.
It didn't work. He's been spreading rumors about favoritism.
They're just rumors. They'll blow over.
Not these ones. You know the three most popular episodes of Captain Hyperion were all written by women, right? The rest of the writer's room knows that too. Buck made sure of that. Annie also made sure to draw attention to your Woman Writers Initiative. Negative attention. Coordinating their complaints against specific female writers' negative attention. Swiping Claire's ID card while she's on a break and locking her out of the office. Negative attention. Nathan Steele hinting during happy hour that some of us were affirmative action hires.
I earned my position here. Wendy, you're a good writer and a hard worker. That's why I'm giving you a 3-day extension on episode 151.
But I already turned in a full script.
Scrap it and give me a new one. One that's less redundant.
But I...
One that's less redundant, Wendy.
Ugh. All right, then. I see where this is going. I was trying to warn you, you know. I thought you'd do something about this.
Captain Hyperion, Space Outlaw, episode 151, Marooned on Planet Machismo. Scene 1, cabin of the SS Titan. Captain Hyperion sits in his pilot's seat with Phoebe, his co-pilot.
In the third audio, Community Voice PHL talk show from WPPM LP 106.5, Billy Cam, Jeffrey Jones interviews Juwan Short, founder of Dahlia Rose Wellness Center.
What are like some things that you can kind of help women and young girls get to a space of understanding it's okay to be, you know, who you are and to show up in that space?
I love that question, primarily because it is something that we as Black women, honestly, it starts off as an individual journey, is from what I've seen, right? Like, I mentor high schoolers in a local district outside of Philadelphia, and then I also have my clients. And what I've seen is being able to show up for yourself is really a personal journey, because a lot of it is you unraveling, right, like the things that you've been taught about how to show up. And typically for most of us, we have our aunties, our grandmoms, our cousins, any other woman in our life telling us how we're supposed to be. And then you struggling against what it is that you feel that is true for yourself, right? So for many Black women, right, like being able to be assertive, right, like if we show up and we're assertive, then it's also looked at as if we're aggressive or passionate about something, someone may take it the wrong way, right? So it's almost trying to figure out, how do you toe the line of, can I show up for myself, but still be someone that other people are wanting to listen to, but also acknowledge like how smart I am, what all I have to bring, you know, to the table, the fact that I am the full table and everybody else has to like sit around me, kind of a thing, right? A lot of that is really the person figuring out for themselves on a personal journey, what is it that they want? Two of the biggest questions that I typically ask people is, what do you want? And who are you? Whenever I ask those two questions, a lot of people are just like, what are you talking about? Primarily because nobody has ever asked them that. So they never had to think about those things in terms of who they are themselves, right? Like, you're always thinking about how to give to everybody else.
Right.
And especially as women, when we go out, we create businesses, or we're thinking about, you know, what type of job to take, about how to take care of ourselves. We're also thinking about, okay, well, if I leave this job, what benefits am I letting go of that could possibly no longer cover my children or my husband? Right. Or, you know, if I take this job, will it allow me flexibility to be able to go care for my parents? Right. Like, our mindset is always wrapped around other people versus just ourselves. And so a lot of times we also have to struggle with that sense of, well, if I show up for myself, does that mean I'm selfish? Because everybody else around us has taught us that when you are solely focused on yourself, you are being selfish. But in reality, it's okay to be selfish. And I tell my clients all the time, I'm giving you permission to show up for you the same way you do for other people. So all that energy that we give out, we also have to give it back to ourselves. So if you find that you can't give yourself back what you've been putting out, then you're overdoing it in some area that isn't coming back to you, right? And so that all has to be taught. So if I'm a mom and I have a daughter, right, like the message I want to give to her is, okay, well, if you're doing all this for everybody else around you, what are you doing for yourself, right? But also as a mom, I need to be showing that too. I need to be showing up for myself. So if I'm not resting and I'm running, 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 and when it comes time for me to sit down, I can't sit because I need to be doing something, that's an opportunity for me to, you know, figure out why am I constantly needing to be busy? What am I trying to distract myself from? Right? Because sometimes we do things so that we don't have to deal with things too. So showing up for yourself is really you being an observer, a gentle observer of your experience, and then deciding, does that still work for me based on where I am today and where I want to go?
You know, like you're saying, maybe they can't let it go because they feel as though people are really dependent on them.
Because it's almost that, what's the quintessential? Well, I'm not going to ask nobody because they can't do it how I can do it, right? Like the same reason why a mom or, you know, someone won't allow someone to help them clean their house. It's like, well, they're not going to clean it like me, right? Or if you want something done, do it yourself, right? Like how many times have you heard that? But in reality, it's like, well, if we were to operate from a space of you get to be your own CEO, right? Like you get to be the owner of your life, then why not have other people support you? And for a lot of people being, or especially a lot of women, Black women, for us, having someone to support us means that we also have to be willing to tell other people what we need. But in order for you to say what you need, you have to be willing to know and go on that journey to decide, what is it that I need? What do I need support with? And, you know, it's easier for you to just do it yourself, but then get frustrated when other people around you aren't helping or giving you the same type of energy that you give them, you show up for them. But it's like, but you brought that on yourself because you don't say to other people what you need. But a lot of times it's also because they don't think that people are going to show up for them in that same way. But it's like, all you're doing is creating a cyclical experience where you don't give other people the chance to show you what they can do.
But what I want to also touch on is you mentioned about not just showing up, but also understanding who you are. And that was one of the questions that you asked, you know, what do you want and who are you? I can dare to imagine that for Black women, that's kind of like a woo-sah, an exhale moment where, like you said, no one's ever asked me who I am. Not even my husband, not even my brothers, not even, you know, nobody's asked me who I am. So therefore, I don't even know. I'm a wife. I'm a mother.
Those are roles. And
I'm
telling them these questions. I'm like, this is your homework. Right. Mm-hmm. And I also do that for my business clients, too. And I'm like, this is your homework. Who are you and what do you want? And then sometimes I may throw in another question that says, what do you have to give up in order for you to become who it is that you're trying to be? Right. Wow. Because those two, those questions really make you start to say, if I allow myself to really say what I want, it brings up a lot of stuff because maybe what you want isn't connected to what you're doing today, might not be connected to that relationship, it might not be connected to the job. So it really means that you would start to have to deal with the reality of your experience and say, maybe I need to start looking at something different, right? Yeah. And normally when I ask that question, like answer that question every day, because who you are and what you want, it changes daily, right? And you know, someone may say, oh, well, I'm a mother. Okay, cool. But that's a role. So who are you, right? Like when these roles are no longer applicable, then who are you? And again, we saw that with COVID where like people were losing jobs, people were working from home. You couldn't identify yourself based on your job anymore or what you did in terms of career because careers have been shifting and changing for so long. So it's like, but then who are you and what, like, what is it that you have to offer? So when I ask my clients that, they're just like,
we are so akin to our roles because society only esteems us if we have a certain role. If I just came up and said, hey, I'm Jeff Jones, they'd be like, okay, whatever, take a number. But if I say, oh, I'm host of a show, I do this, and really? And now I feel a certain level of value and validated because I've defined myself through a role as opposed to just saying, okay, just like me for Jeff Jones, you know? So I like that question. I can only imagine how joyful it is to get that question from your client and the work that they do to do that, because it also leads into the transition of your book, Healing on Purpose.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Vanessa Lowe, and I host Vanessa's Money Hour on WRLGLP 92.9 Germantown Life in Richmond Center on the G-Town Radio platform. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.